Whether you're a music lover or a casual fan, you know when a song really lands, when it really makes its way into your ears, your heart, and gets under your skin. But what if you found out that a song you loved was actually created totally using AI? Would you care? If it slaps, do you care if it's slop? AI is already pretty good at making decent music, but now one of the biggest AI music generating platforms has partnered with one of the world's biggest record labels. It could mean the artificially made music you hear is about to be based on some of your favourite and most popular artists' work. So if you're tapping your toes to songs created by AI, do you care? What does it mean to be a music lover when the creative process is undergoing a paradigm shift away from humans? You're about to hear from a music psychologist and a music sociologist about this, but first, musician Ben Lee. Ben, you're an artist, but you also love listening to music. Do you have any AI-generated tracks caught your ear?
The only ones I've been interested in are the ones that are obviously AI. Like, I like things that sort of make, you know, very pristine, puritanical people say dirty words and things like that. But as far as, you know, dupes from Bangkok Market, which is essentially what we're talking about, you know, it's so deeply boring, profoundly boring.
Why is that? Like, if you didn't, oh gosh, I mean, you're a music guy. I'm not. Like, how do you know?
You don't have to know, but that's sort of not the point. So, like, I think the conversation we should be having is, why has art been reduced to an object and, like, the fetishization of an object rather than as a means of communication? Art is there so that we can learn about what each other think and feel. Whether you can imitate that is completely besides the point. Mm. There's nothing to learn from an imitation about the world that we live in. So I kind of just think of this as like a larger, this is a much larger trend that has been happening, like almost like post-Renaissance, where like art has become something to own rather than to contemplate. It's about the thingness of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I'm guessing you, well, I don't want to preempt you. Have you used or experimented with AI in any of your own music?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, AI, the thing about AI is like, if you use any kind of digital interface, which almost everybody does, unless you're Jack White or something, everybody's using AI to some degree, because the way a lot of plugins work is they are making decisions in real time about audio, like the way we process audio. Mm. So there's nothing inherently wrong with technology as tools. It's just, again, it comes back to this conversation of like, what are we using music for? Isn't it something like, when I think about like, say, Miss Kanina, right, or an artist like that, part of what I'm hearing about is the struggle of being a Black woman in Australia, and I'm learning through her art. So art that just imitated that on an aesthetic level, it wouldn't teach me anything about the struggle. Like, I want the struggle. I want the humanity in it, you know?
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. The voice you've just been hearing there is that of Ben Lee, the real one, not an AI dupe. We are talking about AI and music, though, and I played you a little bit of a track before and asked you what you thought about it. One person says, no, this doesn't slap. This is on the text line. The lyrics are so vanilla and the music is so predictable. I guess that's what people want in the background, but this is seriously depressing as a musician. We've got to draw the line here. And Kelly says, I think I could tell it was AI. I don't really care either way, as it sounds creepy and monotonous. I prefer music that's obviously got human involvement. Well, I'd love to know what you feel about AI songs. Do you care if a song was created by AI, if it's just sounds chill and you like the sound of it? Also with me is Professor Emery Schubert from the University of New South Wales. He specialises in what gives a song that bit of magic and makes us feel something. He's a music psychologist. And Dr. Ben Green, who is a music sociologist and lecturer at RMIT. Emery, I want to start with music that's produced by humans, flesh and blood humans. What makes us drawn to certain songs?
Yeah, hi, thanks for having me, Tegan. What makes us drawn to certain songs is something that Ben actually just mentioned, which is about communication. It's also wrapped around the idea of wanting to experience pleasure. that's the auditory cocktail that music is, which is it enters through the ears rather than through other orifices and creates pleasure, immense pleasure. And so people can get addicted to that in a very nice way.
Dr. Ben Green, there's the song and then there's the other reasons we become fans of an artist. What goes into that?
Well, as Emery and Ben Lee have both said, music is a way that people relate to each other and has been for hundreds of thousands of years. And one of the core relationships is between the artist, the performer, and the audience. And in modern times, what that looks like is the artist's name is given equal billing with the song title. It's right up there, and when people tell you what they like, they'll just as likely say the artist's name as they will the song name. So there's a core relationship there, and that's where we get these interesting questions of authenticity, relatability, star power, all of these things that people are looking for in the artist. So it really is key.
Authenticity is one of those words that gets bandied around a lot at the moment. What's core to that for us?
Well, authenticity, as a sociologist, it goes in big scare quotes. It's a construction. It's always a construction. But it's about relating to and believing in the person behind the music. So there can be competing things there. There might be, I relate to this person, I have feelings just like them. Ringo Starr likes jelly beans just like I like jelly beans. But there's also the, what's special about this person? And it might be Pink on a trapeze flying above the crowd. I could never do that. And that's why I love Pink and why I want to go and see her. And actually the live performance, one of the reasons we really value that is because that's where we can really feel and judge what we perceive as authenticity.
And skill.
Absolutely. Skills are part of it. One of the things about seeing an artist live is you see them pulling off the amazing feat and go, oh, wow, they really are doing that. I'm impressed. I love this artist. So that's an example of that authenticity. But as I say, it's always been a creation, a construction, and that changes over time. We might remember the big furore over Milli Vanilli using lip syncing back in the 90s. I don't know if people would really care so much these days. But it depends on who the audience is, who the artist is, what are the terms, the rules of authenticity in their particular world.
Ben Lee, as a performer, how does that land for you, especially when it comes to live performances?
Yeah, I agree with most of that. The one thing I would say that authenticity is a construct, absolutely. And I'm a big admirer of like the Oscar Wilde, give a man a mask, he'll show you the truth. Like the lie is part of it. Yet the lie of a human being contains conflict and it contains impulses in multiple directions. And that's actually what makes the construct that humans are involved in interesting, because we're conflicted. You know, so I don't think something has to be, I don't think of authentic as like, oh, it's just the sound of someone in the woods who's never touched society before. That's the only authentic thing. But I think all of the innate conflicts and struggles and like the desires for success versus the fear of selling out and all of that stuff is like deeply human. And that's what I want to hear in music. And live, yeah, man, leave it all on the stage, hand-to-hand combat. I want to see blood, you know?
Emery, just coming back to the song, that magic of the song itself, when we're not watching someone literally perform something in front of us, can you create that magic with AI?
Yes, you can create it. And if you can't create it now, we will be able to create it. And that's going to probably raise the ire of the other distinguished guests on the show, but the evidence is suggesting that that's already happening. The people are, when the piece of music is hidden, like you attempted to do in your little experiment at the top of the segment, when it's under really controlled conditions, people cannot pick the difference. And it really ties back to a point that I'd say, which Ben I'm talking about, but both of them make the point about communication and about, you know, you don't have to know. I think Ben Lee made a really interesting point that you don't have to know if it's AI. It's about, music's about something else. But in terms of controlled experimental studies, the evidence is already quite certain that you can actually hide an AI-generated piece of music with real pieces, provided they're equally unfamiliar and people cannot pick the difference.
So this is your own research that you've done. What does it reveal about us?
It reveals to us about that constructed side of the social scale. So there is a biological need. There's reasons why there's biological needs for social connection. But a lot of it is constructed. It's culturally determined. Okay, different cultures have different ways of interacting. So we need to have some flexibility there. And so, you know, it's the belief that you want a human to be there. So if you went to a live concert, and again, Ben Green is the expert on this, if you went to a live concert, then if it was just a machine and someone went and pressed the start button and they left the stage, people would probably stop coming. But if they were playing accompanied by some kind of AI, and again, Ben Lee mentioned this, it's still part of the thrill of you can still connect with the human.
Well, Ben Lee, how's it different to go on a Daft Punk concert, honestly?
Yeah, well, I'd like to say something controversial. I think there is too much emphasis being put on the listener experience. I think the reason we want art is because it gives us something that we need that we don't even realize we need yet. Like the way a consumer responds to the marketplace is not the way art should operate, you know? So I kind of, in some ways, I mean, I don't want this to sound like a selfish artist type thing, but I don't really care what the audience can tell or can't tell. What's interesting to me is like where I can push myself. And that's the artists I know, the we're friends with. What we're interested in is like stretching our audiences and like testing them and provoking them. And we assume the audience in a sense has less expertise and is a little bit more base, because that's what, like, that's how the markets have always worked. So I'm sort of like, I don't know whether they can tell the difference or not. That's sort of not an excuse for giving them a subpar product.
Ben Green?
That's a great point. It's a two-way relationship. There's push and pull. I think of a friend of mine saying the other day that he actually pulled out of his streaming platform because it kept serving him what he likes. It wasn't challenging him. He just kept getting more of the same. And so we do like to be challenged a little bit. And there is perhaps the role of the artist is to provoke and push a little bit.
This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Ben Lee, the musician, Dr. Emery Schubert, Professor Emery Schubert from the University of New South Wales, a music psychologist and music sociologist, Dr. Ben Green, about AI music, especially as one of the biggest AI music generator companies in the world, one of the biggest platforms, has partnered with one of the world's biggest record labels. And I'm asking you whether you care if the music you love is made by AI or not. You are absolutely blowing up the text line for me. It's so interesting to see the breadth of responses. One says, we've been listening to Agentic Orange, an AI band, and the family is all converted. It's like 80s Cool and the Gang, R&B and funk, and it's been amazing how good some of the tracks have been. Engage new forms of art creation, we say. It doesn't need to be mutually exclusive to AI or human-generated. Enjoy what sounds great. Another says, Barton from the Models here, my old band is on Warner's now. My understanding is that the AI deal is not a royalty deal. Nothing will flow to the artist despite our creativity training the machine. This is what I really wanted to get to. The big record label that I gestured at before is Warner, and the AI generating platform is Suno. Basically, musicians can opt in for their music to be used to create AI generated songs. Ben Lee, why would an artist say yes to that?
Oh, look, I can see both sides of that, honestly. Like, there's a part of me that goes like, well, let's see what you can do. Like, the idea that like our careers are like have some sanctity around them, like we're all going to be forgotten. You know what I mean? Like, all of this music we're making in our quest for immortality, it's all going to disappear. It's a drop in the ocean. So there's something intriguing about going, well, let's see what happens. Let's be part of the experiment. And, you know, but overall, I mean, I'd say that like most people don't get into music or the arts because they like not being in control. Like, most people want to control, especially their sound and likeness and all that sort of thing. So I don't know. There's a part of me that's curious, but I don't think I would trust the masses to sort of like do whatever they wanted with my sound and my voice.
Ben Lee, it's really interesting hearing you speak about this, because what really seems to come through for me is this sense of like art is art and commercial interests are separate to that, which is great if you have enough money, but you're an artist trying to make a living. This is a real part of what's happening.
Oh, yeah, no. I didn't say commercial interests are separate. The conflict, though, is what's interesting, right? Like artists like me and like most of my friends are walking a line of art and commerce, and we have to deal. We live in that reality day to day. And I would actually say that, like, you know, I always loved Jarvis Cocker from Pulp. He loved arguing with his record label because he believed at the end of the day, you would push the argument as far as you could get before bending to capitalism. And at the end of it, you'd sort of get the perfect pop product. Like, it's the push and pull that actually makes popular culture interesting and separate from high art. So I don't live not in that reality. You do have to, but at the same time, it's like sometimes it's the people who say no and move in a different direction that realize there is a whole other market who's been waiting, you know, for something a little different. So I don't think you always, the answer to survival in a commercial market is not always just going with the flow of what's happening.
But one of the big things that seems to be happening here is this idea of layback listening, basically what you're chilling to in the background. Ben Green, is that a more fertile ground for AI music than perhaps other types of listening?
It actually already is. So in the age of streaming, one of the things we've seen is the rise of functional music. This is just music for a purpose, to work out to study to. In fact, one of the biggest sectors on streaming platforms is music to sleep to, which tend to be long tracks as well. But these are increasingly in-house sort of faceless productions made within the streaming platform business, because these aren't really the areas where we're so concerned about fandom and authenticity. It's just music for a purpose. There's also the library music used in documentaries or when you're making a slideshow of your photos, the music you can choose from. And one of the things that we're already seeing is that in-house artists and AI artists or AI productions are already on the increase in these fields. And streaming platforms tend to be, or they have a vested interest in directing us towards these things. The layback listener is the listener who gets things served up to them and has a seamless experience where they don't need to make any choices or decisions. It just serves them. And the platforms are actively trying to create this layback listening. And then wouldn't it be in their interest to serve you the AI-created music where they don't have to pay any royalties rather than the human artist-created music? So these are the kinds of conflicts of interest, I guess, that Ben Lee was just talking about that we need to be concerned with. The actual mundane, immediate realities that lawyers and unions and so forth need to be getting engaged with.
On the text line, one person says that the song that I played in the introduction, they say, this is just a Tame Impala remix. Yes, catchy, because it's taken from great human endeavour, skill and commitment, but wrong unless it's clearly labelled via some sort of blockchain ID, in brackets, above my pay grade. Emery, do you think that there needs to be labelling on these, and is that going to change our perception of this music as we're listening to it?
It definitely does change perception. If you label the music, this is AI generated, it will have an impact, even if the musical product is equivalent to human produced product.
Ben Green, do you think there's a benefit there for listeners to know that it's AI generated?
Yeah, one of the big pushes, especially from the artist side at the moment when it comes to AI, is transparency. The other side is compensation. But the first thing being transparency. And that's to do with what we call the moral rights of the artist, being recognised as the person who created something or whose creation is maybe used to create something else. And that's something we're really familiar with when it comes to artist rights. And that's something that is going to be one of the battlefields when it comes to AI, is that transparency, that labelling.
So, Ben Lee, AI-generated music is here. It's probably here to stay. Do you have any ways that you try to break your algorithm and find new music?
Oh, I mean, I'm obsessed with new music. I don't know. It's like it's part of. I don't just rely on an algorithm. I share. You know, it's something friends share with each other. But you know, last night I went to see Gareth Lydiard, who is the main songwriter from The Drones and Tropical Fuckstorm, and I was listening to his music and I was actually thinking about this last night. And I was thinking, like, wow, what would an AI version of this kind of do for me? And I was like, you know what? all I want to do is know about this guy's brain. Mm. That's what I'm obsessed with. The songs are a way into this guy's brain. So for me, starting with that of going like, what can I learn about through the songs of an artist, through music, and chasing that music down just guarantees you'll always be like served interesting, kind of quirky, unique stuff. And I think that, again, looking at it from a human perspective is like, that's where music is most interesting.
A beautiful insight into the human experience. Thank you all so much for joining me today. Ben Lee, musician, Professor Emery Schubert from the University of New South Wales, and Dr. Ben Green, music sociologist at RMIT. Thank you all so much for joining me.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.